Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 28th of July, 2014, the podcast that plays Doctor on TV. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Dave Turcotte. Dave, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back. I'm sure everybody missed me.
So we're going to forego our normal format this week to do another special episode. It's been a while since we talked about the problems with universal health care that advocates just like to gloss over. And it's kind of like with cops behaving badly, there's really no point unless there's something new or unique or extreme about what's going on, and there are just so many of them.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you run into it all the time, and eventually, it's not that you become apathetic, but it's like you can only make the same points over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, if you leave it alone for a while, people do eventually think, oh, well, you haven't talked about it in a while. It must mean everything's okay now.
Yep, and I keep getting that. Hey, you haven't talked about this in a while. There must not be any problems. And I was thinking about this Saturday night after Daniel and I had finished recording last week's podcast, or so I thought. We had to redo it the next morning. But I thought it was probably time to do something on UHC. So I decided to do a special podcast like we did last year with the Supreme Court. So I went to look for stories, and I decided to handicap myself in two ways. One, I decided I'd limit myself to the NHS, which is the UK's socialized medicine program. It's generally the one we have thrown in our face as an example of, see, this is how it's done. And Canada's kind of a close second. And two, I'd limit it to stories that were published in British news outlets in July 2014. Well, turns out it wasn't much of a limit. I very quickly found six good stories we could cover spanning just the previous week, so all of the stories that we're going to cover were posted between July 14th and July 18th.
Wow. That's impressive.
And it's not all of them. There were just a lot of them that I just kind of glossed over, and these are the ones that I thought, oh, those are really good for us to cover.
Oh, no. We don't fail. We don't fail. It's still good. It's still good.
Kind of makes me wonder what would happen if you just do a search with that on a random week and see how many you'd come up with.
I'm reminded of that one episode of The Simpsons where Lisa becomes a vegetarian and Homer and Bart are chasing the pig.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, it's still good.
It's still good. It's just a little airborne. It's still good. So let's get started. And our first story is an announcement from the UK Department of Health. One of the things we're told about how wonderful the NHS is that if you go to the UK and break your arm or something, they'll fix you up for free. Well, no more. There's no more free ride for people who come to the UK from outside the European Union. The Department of Health said they could save up to £500 million a year and prevent abuse of the system from outsiders, basically people known as medical tourists. According to Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt, quote, "We have no problem with international visitors using the NHS as long as they pay for it, just as British families do through their taxes."
Yeah, the only problem with that, though, is they want to charge them almost double as much.
150% of the cost. So you'd need to pay for your broken arm and half of someone else's.
Jesus.
I mean, I can kind of see, like, okay, you didn't pay into the system, so when you come over here, just pay for the procedure that you do. But 150%?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's understandable that you want people to pay if they haven't already paid into the system. But at the same time, you're literally charging them almost double, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's also dangerous because of this increased price. People aren't going to want to go to the doctor because they know they're going to get charged extra, and that could potentially lead to somebody getting worse and potentially even dying because they don't want to go to the doctor.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it's really only UHC countries that have a problem with medical tourism, and the UK isn't a big destination for them anyway. The biggest countries for medical tourism are the US, India, and, I thought this was surprising, Jordan. Jordan has this private hospitals association that's attracted 250,000 international patients in 2012. They brought in over $1 billion. They were named 2014 Medical Destination of the Year by IMTJ Medical Travel Awards. And in India, it's a $2 billion a year industry. Medical costs in India are around a tenth of what they are in America or Britain. The U.S. gets a lot of medical tourism for innovative life-saving procedures, orthopedic surgeries, and things that people in other countries get put on these long waiting lists for. But we actually export more medical tourists than we bring in because of the huge costs of hospital stays and the costs of more commonly available procedures.
Wow. And here I thought the reason that Jordan got so much traffic was because people thought Michael ran the country.
But we've talked about this before on the podcast, and I've made several videos on how we can reduce costs of healthcare. And there's no reason we can't get healthcare down even cheaper than it is in India without sacrificing quality. And then we'll get even more medical tourists and not lose people to India, and that can only be a good thing.
Sounds reasonable.
Patients Without Borders says the top medical destinations are alphabetically Costa Rica, India, Israel, Malaysia, Mexico, Singapore, South Korea, Taiwan, Thailand, Turkey, and the United States. And they estimate the world market between $38 and $55 billion.
Wow.
So that raises the question, what's the NHS complaining about?
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, they say it's a drain on their system. But in 2010, 52,000 people came to the UK and got healthcare services. That same year, 63,000 people left to get their healthcare elsewhere. So, just like the US, more people are leaving the UK to get healthcare elsewhere than come to the UK to get it. So that should be a net benefit. Whatever they're paying on the medical tourists that come in is more than offset by money they're saving by people leaving to go get it elsewhere.
Yeah, just not much to really say there. It's just, wow.
And I mean, this whole thing about, oh, it's the Tories' fault because they cut the budget. You know, they love playing that blame game, and it's just empty rhetoric.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, they cut the budget. Oh, no. Ugh. Stop the pain, please. Oh, wait, I can't because your doctors are charging me 150%.
Well, the thing is, a market-driven system, even one as far from a free market as the U.S., welcomes all participants, no matter where they hail from. But a socialized system needs to take in as much money as possible and provide as few services as possible. And medical tourism is absolutely a problem in these systems.
And we have a word for that. Rationing. That's exactly what they're doing. They're rationing.
Right.
Because it's not sustainable on its own.
Okay, Dave, I'm going to let you have this first break to tell us about three boys who need our help.
Yes, my friend Matt, who moved to Ireland recently, has been working with a charity called Join Our Boys. Join Our Boys is a charity for three children in Ireland who suffer from a disease known as Duchenne Muscular Dystrophy, also known as DMD. Now, I'm just going to give some facts about DMD real quick. It is the most common lethal genetic disorder diagnosed during early childhood. It is a progressive neuromuscular disease that destroys muscle tissue and is currently fatal. 20,000 children are diagnosed with this horrific disease annually in the developed world. There is no known treatment or cure at the present time. DMD knows no cultural, ethnic, economic, or social boundaries. It can happen to any family.
Just whoever happened to lose the genetic lottery.
Yes, basically. In their family, it can happen randomly in up to about 35% of cases, basically even with no previous family history. It is almost exclusively a disease for boys, causing them to be wheelchair-bound usually between the ages of 8 and 12 years of age, and leaves them fighting for their lives in their late teens and early 20s. In the UK, 100 boys a year are born with DMD, and 2 boys die each week of the disease, making it one of the world's biggest genetic killers. There is a severe lack of funding for research into DMD internationally. The research is complex, lengthy, and because of this, it's expensive. The implications for families living with DMD are devastating, resulting in multiple losses on many different levels. As soon as a family is given a DMD diagnosis, they are changed forever. The human cost to all families affected by DMD is immense and immeasurable. Basically, there is this family in Ireland who all 3 of their children have this horrible disease. Their names are Archie, which is the oldest son. He is 8 years old. And they have 2 twin sons, George and Isaac, who are only 4. It's absolutely horrifying that a family, not with just one kid, but all 3 of their children, have this awful heinous disease. And they're basically doing this charity to not only raise awareness of DMD nationally and internationally, but to ensure that they have the additional resources they require to function, to remain mobile for as long as possible, and to live a life filled with purpose and meaning despite their physical limitations. They want to work in collaboration and support registered charities funding research into the disease that aim to fund a treatment or cure for this devastating illness. And they also want to be able to live as normal a life as humanly possible. Obviously, it's very difficult considering what's going on, but obviously that doesn't mean they shouldn't try. From what I've understand with discussions I've had with Matt, the oldest son, Archie, is already at a point where it's hard for him to walk across a room by himself, and he's only 8 years old.
Wow.
Just devastating. Absolutely devastating. There are links, though, that you guys can go to. You can go to joinourboys.org. You can also check them out on Facebook at Join Our Boys. They also have a Twitter account. I am not personally connected to this charity, but I just felt it was something that I should help promote and help my friend out.
Well, Dave, you know that if I were as rich as many of my detractors make me out to be, I'd be throwing money your way. As it is, all I can do is pass it on, so if you're listening and thinking you'd like to help but you just don't have the money, we get it. But please, pass it on to everyone you know. It really does help more than you might think.
Yeah, passing it on is just as important as donating money yourself. I understand times are tough. It's tough for everybody. I know from a personal standpoint. Trust me, if I could, I'd be throwing my entire life savings into this. But I can't do it. I don't have the money to help. And this is how I feel I can contribute to at least spread the word and help these kids out as much as I can. Just help as much as you can. Even if it's just telling a friend or telling a family member or posting something on Facebook or posting something on Twitter. Help these kids out. I mean, it could happen to you someday. If you have a child with this disease, these kids need help, and I just want to spread the word.
So we've mentioned the hideous waiting times with the NHS and how they haven't gotten better. We haven't covered accident and emergency services, what they call A&E, but their wait times have always been relatively bad as well. Of course, if you listen to the NHS evangelists, they'll tell you they solve the problem because government put down words on paper that say they have to see 95% of patients within 4 hours. But in reality, they haven't met this target in a year. The last time they hit the target was July 14th, 2013.
What's that? Magical incantations don't work? Who knew? Last I checked, this wasn't Dungeons and Dragons.
Just pray. Prayer works, doesn't it? And the interesting thing is, and we see this in the other story too, they're playing the blame game because the Tories in power are trying to rein in Britain's runaway budget problems. The thing is, this still happens under Labour governments as well. It doesn't matter who's prime minister or who controls parliament. This has always been a problem. And anyone with a rudimentary understanding of economics will tell you why. The blame game just doesn't work here.
But it's not the NHS, that's the problem. It's those evil people who want to stop precious government from doing good and spreading rainbows and sunshine and unicorns. What do you hate, rainbows and sunshine and unicorns?
According to Dr. Cliff Mann of the College of Emergency Medicine, quote, "We have a drastic shortage of doctors, and that is hampering our ability to cope with rises in demand." And we have that problem here, too. State and federal governments artificially limit the number of licensed medical doctors, and they make it difficult to build new hospitals. If you keep the supply artificially low, you make the price go up. All you need to do to get the price down again is remove the restrictions and let supply rise. That will both increase the quantity of medical services available and lower prices. It's basic economics.
Yeah, but Shane, that's witchcraft. That's not along the lines of our precious worldview.
Yeah, that's magical thinking, I guess.
You can't go against the grain. That makes you evil.
Yeah, that's magical thinking, but putting down words on paper and expecting it to all work out, there's nothing magical about that.
You utopian idealist!
Mann talked about a 5.7 increase in hospital stays and said, quote, a lot of this is related to the aging population. And while the percentage rise may seem small, we are still talking about a lot of people. But again, with a market-driven system, the more people who participate, the better. It's a positive-sum game. Things like this are only a problem in socialized or heavily corporatized systems where supply is kept artificially low.
Rationing.
Yep.
It's that word again.
And isn't it horrible how the Tories made the population age so they need to use more services? I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't even think they get it. If they did, they'd realize how foolhardy their stupid universal health care was a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, according to Shadow Health Secretary Andy Burnham, it's actually related to the shortage of general practitioners. Quote, it is harder for people to get a GP appointment while social care has been cut to the bone. The result is record numbers coming through A&E and thousands of older people trapped in hospital. Pressure is backing up through A&E, ambulance response times are getting worse, and waiting lists are at a 6-year high.
Jeez. How can these people sleep at night who support this crap? I have to question, how can they sleep at night? I just got through talking with probably the king of wackos in terms of statists, and it's the same nonsense. We're just a tree of life! We're a tree of life. We want to work as a team. We want to help everyone. And then you hear stuff like this. It's like, oh, no, that wasn't us. That wasn't us.
Yeah. It's those other guys' fault. If they hadn't been in our system messing it up. Yeah. Never any accountability.
Never.
History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects, and when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. Well, in addition to the problem of artificially low supply, there's the problem of artificially high demand. And we've had that problem here in the U.S., and it's only gotten worse with Obamacare, where you have people going to the doctor every time they have the sniffles or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's getting even worse in the U.K. The NHS has just relaxed their eligibility requirements for statins. And statins are drugs that can help lower cholesterol levels and reduce cholesterol that's built up in your arteries. And don't get me wrong, this is a really good drug, no doubt about it. But it's not for everyone, and yet, under the new guidelines, 40% of British adults are now eligible for and being advised to take statins.
Ridiculous. Is there any common sense in these people? You don't advise people who don't need medication to take it. That's irresponsible. Especially considering, yes, statins are good medicines, but they do have side effects. You don't just throw that risk on people who don't need it.
Yeah. And here in the U.S., the American Heart Association just came out with new recommendations. They recommend that 56 million Americans aged 40 to 75 should consider statins, and that includes the 25 million that are already taking them. That's way below 40% of the adult population. And even that number is considered overreaching by some experts who say that lifestyle changes should be recommended before statins should be considered.
Just simpletons, a lot of them.
Even before this, Britain was known as the statins capital of Europe. They have the second highest prescribing rate. GPs in Britain actually have part of their pay linked to take up of the pills. You know, exactly what they complain about here. Oh, you know, GPs are on the take from the pharmaceutical companies. Good thing that doesn't happen with the NHS. Yeah.
You might even say they have the highest stats in statins.
They're by far the most prescribed medication in Britain. Currently, the NHS pays £450 million a year for them, and these new guidelines will add another £53 million on top of that. That's over half a billion pounds a year just for statins.
I'd make a joke here about pounds and cholesterol lowering, but nah.
Too easy.
Too easy.
The October 2013 issue of the British Medical Journal warned against this. There are a lot of pretty bad side effects with statins, and that includes muscle and joint pain, nausea, diarrhea, and constipation. And there's the potential for chronic muscular problems, liver damage, type 2 diabetes, and even memory loss. Even if you're determined to be in a high-risk category, they're still not recommended until after lifestyle changes have been implemented, and that includes stopping smoking, eating healthy, exercising 30 minutes a day, and managing your stress levels. I know we all want the magic pill that makes the problem go away, but reality just does not work like that.
It's true. Trust me, I've tried. It's true.
Yeah, and it's just like things like you go on the statins, you get the muscle and joint pain, that means you're less likely to exercise than you were before.
Yeah, my dad takes them. He's only in his 50s, but he takes them.
How are they working out for him?
He still eats the same as you shouldn't.
Oh.
And, yeah, so.
Yeah, I was just looking for that magic pill.
Yeah.
Professor Sir Michael Marmot, you gotta love those British titles, director of the Institute of Health Equity at UCL, said, quote, "Any intervention that reduces risk of disease and prolongs lives is to be welcomed. That said, we should not simply use pharmaceuticals to treat the results of unhealthy conditions. We have to address the root causes of cardiovascular disease. Choosing healthy lifestyles is more difficult because our society promotes cheap, unhealthy foods, low alcohol prices, and car use instead of walking or cycling."
But I don't want to walk. I have a car. And it's all the way over there.
Yeah. No, I need the handicapped sticker so that I can park as close to Walmart as I can and use that little tiny car to get around the store so that actual people with broken legs and walkers don't have it available for them.
It should be noted that this is talking about the people who abuse these handicapped stickers, not people with actual handicaps.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I see it all the time. People, I mean, don't get me... I'm a big guy. I would be considered obese, under any metric. But even I don't want to be the guy who parks right in front of the place. I don't mind the little extra walking. It's good for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't stand when people do that. I really can't. And the worst offenders are people who use the handicap sticker without actually having the person that it's for with them.
Oh, yeah.
They're the worst offenders, and I know people who do that.
It's just, it's close,
yeah.
And we're too lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like here in North Carolina, they hand those things out like candy. I mean, it's so ridiculously easy to get one of those stickers.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure Connecticut's not much better.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to poo-poo statins here. They're great for people who need them when they've already made these lifestyle changes. I mean, what changes they can, because a lot of people are disabled and can't exercise when they've made whatever lifestyle changes they can, and they still have problems, and the benefits they get from statins outweigh the side effects. They're great. But it's like the NHS is using them as the first resort for dealing with cholesterol problems, not the last.
Yeah, typical. They you know what it is? They want that quick solution so that they can get people out of their hands.
Yep.
That's exactly what it is.
You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your Bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers. And Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.bogosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.bogosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. Well, you know, what's interesting about all this whining about the Tory budget cuts and so forth? Is that the NHS is still paying for not only things like homeopathic treatments and even homeopathic hospitals, but also things like boob jobs and gastric bands.
I just... Thank God I believe in the non-aggression principle.
Yeah. Really makes you feel a NAP violation coming on, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It does. Jesus. You know, and what kills me about this is... that we're trying to help people, and I'm just spoiler here. They're willing to pay for this crap, but they're not willing to pay for life saving surgery.
Yeah.
And what kills me about this is people constantly tell me you don't care about the sick because you're against paying for their whatever, and yet I look at this and their precious government is. Not willing to pay for something that could save somebody's life, but they're willing to pay for the most non-essential crap that you could possibly come up with, and stuff that doesn't even work, like homeopathy.
Yeah.
You know what, statists? Don't come up to me and give me that crap no more, because all I have to do is look up stuff like this, which is not that hard. Your argument is just completely stupid. It falls flat. It's non-existent.
Yeah.
Stop it. I feel like the dog owner... who, after a dog goes to the bathroom on the floor, you got to take the dog's head and put its face right in it and tell him, no, no, that's bad. That's how I feel when I look at stuff like this.
Well, and here's a case in point. 28-year-old Scott Elliott had a stroke in March of 2012, and he was rushed to the hospital. They found out that he was born with a hole in his heart. The NHS doesn't support the operation he needs, which is a patent foramen oval closure. I probably mangled that pronunciation, but what else is new? So now he's embroiled in a legal battle to vastly improve his health and possibly even save his life. Quote, it is like walking around having a ton of bricks over my head, waiting for them to fall and kill me. I want to move on with my life, but I can't until I have this operation. I don't smoke. I eat healthily. I have worked all my life and paid my taxes, but when I needed the NHS, it was not there for me. What makes it harder to take is when I see people getting boob jobs on the NHS. And it seems like I would be fine if I needed a gastric band if I had eaten too much. How on earth do they get approval for these things which seem to reward unhealthy lifestyles? What do I have to do to get my operation?
Move to another country?
Yeah, pretty much.
Stop buying into the crap that they're feeding you? That this is good for everybody? That's a good start. And I'm not saying that to just him, I'm saying that to a lot of people, because I know for a fact that he's not the only one that had to go through that crap with them.
Oh, yeah.
And the sad part is, this is what happens when you ration. You end up having them more than willing to pay for non-essential malarkey. It's ridiculous. And again, stop acting like you care about sick people when you're basically rejecting legitimately... about to die people.
Yeah.
But you're more than willing to pay so that some women in England can have a nice chest. Or some slob who spends his entire day eating fried chicken and drinking 10 cases of beer can not die the next day.
Well, he's had no trouble finding health consultants to request the operation, and he's repeatedly been shot down by the NHS... who says that, get this, the benefits don't justify the costs. Now, isn't that exactly what they say free market medicine would do, even though it wouldn't?
Oh, yeah. We get accused of taking shortcuts and all this crap just to save pennies. And you know what? These people are truly the scum of the earth when it comes to stuff like this. You say we're cutting corners? Yeah, okay, that's why we're not the ones who would reject a guy who needs surgery to close a hole in his heart, whereas you guys were.
Yeah. And once again, it's just another case of their worst fears with the free market actually happening with big government.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, that doesn't count. Because they're a tree of life and a team, and you're just not a team player. You apparently, we're just the guys who were benched and were pissed off about it.
And now, instead of this operation, he has to take a daily cocktail of pills for the rest of his life, and even then, it's only a matter of time before he gets another stroke.
Yeah, what more is there to say about this other than, God, these people are just so full of it that they might actually drown in it.
And meanwhile, NHS-covered breast enlargements have increased 145% over the last decade. Oh, but the problem is that the Tories are in power now. Right.
These people are nuttier than squirrel turds.
Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. Of course, what's the thing the UHC apologists say whenever we point out something like this? Say it with me now. It's an isolated incident.
Oh, it's so isolated that nobody has ever heard of it, apparently.
Well, except, of course, for the Royal College of Surgeons, who just released the results of an investigation in a report titled, Is Access to Surgery a Postcode Lottery? They found that 44% of NHS commissioning groups require patients to be in a certain degree of pain and immobility before they'll consider surgery. And of course, with a lot of these conditions, you really need the surgery before you get to that point, or your condition might have progressed to the point where it's become inoperable. And yes, they do say this includes vital surgical procedures.
Of course it does. Of course it does. This almost reminds me of like how they have lotteries for charter schools here. And then they say charter schools don't work because you can't get to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, except when this happens in an actual scenario. Oh, no, it's those evil, unicorn-hating, no-good Tories who just, they cut the budget. And they're horrible and evil. And that's why we need to support rainbows and sunshine.
Well, they found that 73% of these commissioning groups do not follow the rules set down by the NIH, and 58% have no set policy at all, which means it's all just arbitrary and based on whatever these bureaucrats feel like doing at the time.
Which is pretty much how government works anyway.
Yeah, true. According to RCS President Claire Marks, quote, this report seems to show that local commissioners are imposing arbitrary rules governing access to some routine surgery. The motivation may not be financial, but it is clear that some CCGs do not commission services using clinically accepted evidence-based guidance.
Of course they don't.
And of course, the co-chair of the NHS Clinical Commissioners, Dr. Steve Kell, had his apologetics already. Quote, to insinuate that their motivation is purely financial is wrong. There must be a balance between local decision-making and national guidelines. Yes, there has to be a balance between treating people and letting them suffer.
There has to be a balance between people who aren't raped and people who are.
There has to be a balance between rape and lovemaking. We have to allow some rape. There has to be some of that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? Clearly, you are an anti-rape extremist.
Yep, that's me.
Clearly.
His co-chair, Dr. Amanda Doyle, said, quote, ensuring patients get the best possible care against a backdrop of increasingly squeezed finances is one of the biggest issues CCGs face. Hey, wait a minute. Didn't her co-chair just say that it wasn't financial?
Yeah. Oh, gee, they're caught lying. Who knew?
Quote, Asking patients to lose weight before having hip operations is about reducing the clinical risk to the patient and improving the chance of successful operations. It is not about money. Well, and what about people who can't lose weight if their condition is so bad, or if they don't have the time to do it before their condition progresses? And, you know, it seems to me if someone needs hip surgery, they're less able to move around and exercise, which is a big part of losing weight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is so perverse. If a private hospital did that here, people would be up in arms over it.
Oh, yeah. I could already see the pitchforks and torches now.
Yeah. But it's government, so that makes it different.
They're a tree of life, you know. And we're part of a team.
Yeah, and you and I are just the unicorn haters.
We're just unicorn haters who were benched. Or were just disgruntled.
Quote, tonsillectomy, although one of the most common procedures, still carries risks to the patients. The watch and wait approach means clinicians can assess the severity and frequency of attacks to ensure the benefit of having an operation outweighs the risks to the patient. Now, come on! It's a tonsillectomy, people! And people who need it for reasons of obstructive sleep apnea or other breathing problems shouldn't have to wait at all. They need to breathe.
What the hell is the holdup? You didn't have enough ice cream to give them?
And even if it is due to simple tonsillitis, that infection can grow and spread and become dangerous. It can even lead to rheumatic fever and kidney disease. Now, this is a problem in the developing world. The only reason it isn't a problem here is because we do tonsillectomies.
That requires doing things. We can't allow this.
But, I mean, this is anti-vaxxer-level thinking. They seek to limit the very procedure that makes it not be a problem to begin with.
Yeah, usually when the government is involved, you think in opposites. It's opposite world. It's bizarro world.
Yeah.
And this is what you get.
Well, and it's like you've pointed out in other stories, this is rationing.
Yeah.
It's complete rationing.
I almost picture the wait for surgeries like the food line in Oliver.
Yeah.
Sir, please, sir, can I have a tonsillectomy? A tonsillectomy? No.
Yeah, or like the bread lines in the Soviet Union. Comrade, you should be thankful. In America, they don't even have bread lines.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it's pretty much a universal rule in economics. People act the way they're incentivized. Money and budgets may not even cross their minds, but they're working in an environment where money is low, and that results in shortages. They have to delay treatment, not because they're being bean counters, but because the resources just aren't there. And, of course, their brains come up with rationalizations for it. Human beings are very good at that. But it's funny how you don't see those same recommendations in places that aren't under those kinds of constraints. No, in those places, it's get the tonsillectomy done already.
Yeah. Again, rationing. It's that wonderful word.
And yet again, we have the blame game and fingers pointing at David Cameron. According to MP Andy Burnham, quote, Labor always warned that David Cameron's reorganization would be an attack on the N in NHS and lead to a postcode lottery running riot. This is precisely what has happened. Patients should not be waiting in pain and discomfort for operations that are freely available elsewhere. Ministers promised to rule out arbitrary rationing, and they can't run from this promise anymore. But again, that's the same sort of thing that was happening when the Labor Party was in power.
Have you ever noticed that every time you run into a country with universal health care, they always promise to fix it?
Yeah.
And yet they never do?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I wonder why. Also, have you noticed, how come you never hear of the politicians there having to have to deal with these long wait lines?
Hmm.
Oh, wait, that's right. They're not the peasant scum.
Yeah. They get the proper treatment. The NHS isn't for them. It's for you people.
Yeah. Thinking you're on our level.
Yeah. None of this is going to change until politicians start accepting responsibility for the negative results of their own policies, which is not very likely to happen. So I guess the only other alternative is the people just deciding they've had enough and just demanding things be done differently.
Yeah, you know what? It's going to require 2 Christmas miracles and an act of God for that to happen. And last I checked, it's not December and God doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it might take just until you spiral down to the inevitable unsustainability where it's just impossible. You're taxing everyone to pay for so few procedures that at that point, you know, the system will just collapse. And that's probably what it's going to have to take, which is a shame because that's like the worst possible scenario.
Well, that's universal healthcare in a nutshell.
Yeah, true.
The worst case scenario.
And Social Security and all those other things.
Yep.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers, backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now.
Okay, so for this last story, I thought we'd look at something that's at least halfway positive. There's a procedure called selective dorsal rhizotomy, which can help kids with cerebral palsy avoid lifelong mobility problems. According to the St. Louis Children's Hospital, this procedure is better studied and better understood than any other surgery, including orthopedic surgery, which many cerebral palsy patients require later as they grow into adulthood. That hospital alone has already given the procedure to 140 children. Advantages include reduced risk of spinal deformity, decreased motor weakness, fewer hip problems, less back pain, and faster recovery compared to other procedures. A study of 2,700 patients who have received the procedure since 1987 showed that less than a dozen experienced complications, none of them long-term.
Well, sounds like, you know, that surgery would be something that they would jump on. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah. I mean, I've been reading up on this. It sounds amazing. I'm kind of becoming a cheerleader for this thing. You know, even when they talk about, you know, the potential side effects and the potential complications. I mean, I've known people with cerebral palsy, and, you know, a lot of them are in wheelchairs for life. Even the ones who are able to walk without a cane or anything like that, they don't walk very fast. They walk kind of bent-legged, and it's not very pretty. But people who have had this procedure, they go up and they walk normally and they can run and you can look at them and can't even tell they're disabled.
Yeah, you would think innovation like that would be, you know, applauded, but not in the crazy fun world of GovCo land.
Nope, none of that is good enough for the NHS, who has never offered the procedure. Despite the fact that the article once again blames Tory cuts, which have only been like the last 3 years or whatever, this operation has been done successfully at least since 1987. But now, finally, the NHS is allowing the procedure in a pilot program, which will allow the procedure to be given to 120 children this coming year.
After being dragged kicking and screaming, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a start. One of the children who got the procedure was 10-year-old Ben Bradley. He couldn't get the surgery through the NHS, so it had to be obtained privately with money donated from readers of the British newspaper The Mirror. As a result, he's now able to walk. According to the boy's mother, quote, "I feel pleased for the parents of the children who will receive treatment, but I also feel sorry for the parents of those missing out as a result of the limits placed on these operations by the NHS. It means they will not get the SDR, and their children will still have the same level of pain which I've seen Ben go through. I've been up with him at night when he's been in agony. This decision means that other children will suffer in the same way when they could be helped."
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not enough to cover, it's not anywhere near enough to cover all the 1 in 400 children who suffer from cerebral palsy, but at least it's a start.
Yeah, it's a start.
I'm trying to take a glass half full look here, although I think it's more like a glass 1/400th full thing.
It's more like the glass was broken and they tried to, you know, get a new one ready, but they somehow failed at that and the water was spilling into the sink anyway.
And of course, the apologists are all ready to misinform the public about the procedure rather than put egg on the face of their precious NHS. According to James Palmer, Clinical Director of Specialized Services at NHS England, quote, although current evidence is limited, SDR surgery shows real promise for some patients with mobility problems, and that's why we want to explore it further through our innovative evaluation program. But this provides a real opportunity to gather the vital evidence we need on the effectiveness of the procedure for the benefit of our patients. I mean, everything about this just really, I mean, he says, like, you know, the evidence is limited. The evidence is not limited! It's been extremely well studied. It has a fantastic track record. Most of the children who have had this procedure have grown up with no indication that they ever had a disability to begin with. And again, in 2,700 patients, there were no long-term negative side effects. And yet he thought, oh, this is an opportunity. We're innovative. We need to study it, for crying out loud. God.
Jane.
Yeah.
You're not being a team player. Is someone feeling a little disgruntled?
Oh, yeah, I'm not on the let children suffer team.
Oh, well, yeah. You know, you gotta back off that train.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta be a team player. You gotta, you know, you were supposed to sit on that bench and cheer for the team.
But, I mean, the thing about it is, he's not even trying to say, well, we'd be giving this procedure to everyone if it weren't for those bad Tories. No, he's trying to make it sound like an experimental procedure that we don't have the data showing how safe and effective it is, and he's just wrong. He's lying. That's just outright lies.
Shane, what do you expect? That's what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. We know this. Even the people who defend these people know this.
Well, I'm not surprised, but I don't let that stop me from being outraged.
Oh, no, not at all. But it's just one of those things we have to deal with all the time. And the real outrage is the people who know better, and they know they're lying. Don't ever let them kid you. They know they're lying.
Oh, yeah.
They sit back and think, oh, well, it's okay. That they're the coach. You got to follow the coach.
Here's the interesting thing about this whole blame game thing. It doesn't help them. The Mirror article says, quote, patients have been denied the operation after NHS bosses questioned if the £20,000 cost was good value for money. It's amazing how they blame market-based healthcare for doing that. Oh, but it's all the fault of those horrible Tories, never mind the fact that, again, we see this under Labour Party rule as well.
Doesn't count.
The fact is, Democrat or Republican, Conservative or Labour, it doesn't matter. Politicians should not be determining healthcare budgets and services and outcomes in any way. That can only result in more people suffering. There is no reason for denying this surgery to children who need it, most of whom would go on to live normal lives as a result. And as we've seen, it's just a microcosm of the problems inherent with UHC.
Of course, if they actually fixed these kids up, then they wouldn't have anything to hold over everybody.
Nah.
And that's the truth. That's what it comes down to. Part of the reason why they ration is, yeah, it's true that they don't have a lot because of the nature of socialized healthcare. But these people also love to dangle the sick over other people so that they can play the sympathy card when you say, oh, gee, this isn't a good idea. And they do it all the time, whether they know it or not. They dangle the sick as if they were puppets on strings. And to me, that is more outrageous than anything a free market thinker could ever say.
Well, that wraps up this There's Nothing Wrong With You Than An Expensive Operation Can't Prolong edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the Bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page, and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Dave Turcotte for joining me.
No problem. I'm a team player.
Until next time, here's a quote from Lysander Spooner. The highwayman takes solely upon himself the responsibility, danger, and crime of his own act. He does not pretend that he has any rightful claim to your money or that he intends to use it for your own benefit. He does not pretend to be anything but a robber. Furthermore, having taken your money, he leaves you as you wish him to do. He does not persist in following you on the road against your will, assuming to be your rightful sovereign on account of the protection he affords you. The proceedings of these robbers and murderers who call themselves the government are directly the opposite of these of the single highwayman. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Join our boys.
Yeah, give us those websites again.
Yeah, go to joinourboys.org. You can go to Facebook and look up Join Our Boys. They're also on Twitter at Join Our Boys. They're also on Instagram at Join Our Boys.
And the Facebook is just facebook.com/joinourboys, all one word.
Yes. They also have an events page as well, which is Join Our Boys Events, all one word. Yeah, because I guess they have, like, famous bands and stuff. They perform concerts and everything and have, like, fundraisers and stuff like that.
Cool.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So go there, give as much as you can, and if you can't, or either way, please spread these around to everyone you know.